Night Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine. Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
It is Thursday night, and if you can hear our voices, you are exactly where you need to be. She is Karen Frazier. I am Rick Hale. This is Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. Welcome. Karen, how are you?
Well, I'm good. How about you?
Excellent. So you got. I understand you have quite the story to tell.
Rick, you can read Skype.
I know. I can actually read. Even though I went to, like, you know, a little bit of Chicago public schools, I can read and write.
I'm so excited about that. So, you know that we have activity in our home.
Yes.
And last Thursday, actually, no, it was last Friday and Saturday. And I never understand why things happen the way they do, but we have, like, bursts of activity, and then things will calm down again, and bursts of activity, and things will calm down.
Happens.
Yeah, and so everybody, Tanner was, and it was in the evenings. Tanner was at graduation. He was like out on a date on Friday night, and at graduation Saturday night, and Jim was working Friday and Saturday night, and I was home alone. And both nights, things just started picking up. So Friday night, I'm sitting in my living room, and Tanner's bedroom is upstairs. It's the whole upstairs, and it's got hardwood floors on it. So you can pretty much hear what things are going on up there. Well, he keeps his bedroom door closed while he's gone, because he doesn't want the dogs to go up there and, like, poop in his room. I don't blame him.
No, it's because he's a teenage boy, but go ahead, proceed.
Yeah, well, that's why we're not allowed to have a black light in his room. That's a big difference.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
But I had one. That was the 80s, though, but okay.
Yeah, right. But anyway, so his bedroom door is closed. All the dogs are downstairs with me, and I hear his office chair start rolling back and forth across his floor.
Okay.
And I looked up at the ceiling and I yelled, "I'm trying to work, knock it off!" And it went, and that was it.
And that was it.
Uh-huh. And then it was like that all Friday and Saturday, just weird things happening. A lot of footsteps upstairs in Tanner's room and things going on. And couple doors opening and closing, and some things with the lights. So I don't know. I just, every once in a while, we get this, like, this burst of activity, and I never know what it's about. If it's something with the house, if it's somebody trying to get my attention, because a lot of times it happens when I'm alone, but I'm not crazy, you know?
No, not at all.
No, nuts.
No. You're not losing it one bit. I'm losing it, but you're not. I've lost it a long time ago. You know what it sounds like, though, to me? It sounds like just basically attention-seeking type stuff, which I cannot help but wonder if entities have, like, some kind of problem with short-term memory, you know, like the dude from Memento, you know, they got to, you know, tattoo the reminder on their, across their chest, "We're going to try and scare the hell out of Karen today. Remember." But no, I mean, I kind of wonder, I mean, is there something that happens to the memory after death that you constantly feel this need to try and show yourself to people? You know, it's like, "Hey, we know you're there." Huh?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, because, like I say, it's always in bursts of activity.
Right.
So it's hard to know, but it's kind of entertaining.
Yeah. No, I mean, it really is. I mean, you know, every now and then with Pauline down here, she'll, you know, I'll be on here late at night, and I can hear her, feel her just walk up behind me and go like that.
Yeah.
And it's like, yep, yeah, I'm here.
Well,
you know, how you doing?
Yeah. And then Tanner got home from graduation and he went upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, "Have you been in my room?" He said, "No." I said, "Your chair was rolling around up there." He said, "Well, whoever was rolling around in my chair turned on my TV to TMZ, too." He never watches TMZ. It's like some Hollywood gossip channel, I guess. And his TV had been turned on to TMZ as well.
Oh, hold on a second. The apparitions in your house like trash TV?
Apparently.
Why does that not surprise me?
I guess they're not, you know, that's probably why they're trying to get my attention, because they're not getting what they need from me, because I just told you I turned on my TV last night for the first time in a couple of months. I don't really watch TV.
Yeah, I turn on Cartoon Network every now and then. They'll probably dig on that, you know, watch some Aqua Teen Hunger Force or whatever.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Oh, and then Rob St. Helen said this morning at his house, his computer turned itself on and he looked at his mouse and it was moving.
It was, I don't know, I think Rob St. Helen has bigger problems, something about hookers or whatever at the place that he works, I don't know.
Whatever. Oh, well, he writes about that place, and he writes about that place in Paranormal Underground, you know, it's our current haunted hotel, so.
Correct. So,
yes.
Tonight, we are going to be joined by Mike Roberts. If nobody knows who Mike Roberts is, you're going to, and you should, because he is not only a paranormal investigator and researcher with Research Paranormal, he is also the president, CEO, and Lord Overlord of Demented Entertainment, LLC. Now, Demented Entertainment, LLC, these guys are like the super paranormal agents for all the paranormal people that are on TV. So, you know, we're going to be checking in with him. And, you know, and not only that, he is also an author of the book I Am a Ghost Hunter. Now, the thing that really caught my eye about that book is it's actually sort of an homage to Hans Holzer. And as everybody knows, I have a serious crush on Hans Holzer. Exactly. So that was definitely the selling point for me.
Oh, very good. So I just wanted to point out that Chad just said that he does not feel that TMZ is trash TV because that's where he gets all of his Hollywood news. I'm just telling you. That's what Chad says.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Karen. I did not hear a word you said. You kind of like blinked out on me.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said Chad just let us know that TMZ is not trash TV. He gets all of his Hollywood news there.
Oh, so
he keeps up with the Kardashians on TMZ, apparently.
Oh God, why did anybody want to keep up with the Kardashians? But you know, I'm going to leave my personal editorial to myself because that kind of stuff just gets me into trouble. But now here is something that is amazingly awesome, and I already know what Theodore, or my son, or as I like to call him, the future world's greatest psychical researcher, I know what he's getting for Christmas this year, Karen.
I think I might know what it is, too. I wish my kids were younger so that I could get this for mine.
I don't know if it's more
for
him.
And then I could play with it. Yeah.
Exactly. So why don't you tell everybody what it is, because this is like this is going to be the hip toy for ghost hunters this season and their children.
It totally is. It's a Lego haunted house.
It's about damn time.
I know. Well, and you know, it's really funny because you look and I know that we say every once in a while, is the market saturated or is this ghost thing going to break? Is this ghost fad going to go away? You know, no. Now we've got ghost toys. Every other movie is some kind of supernatural. I was telling you before the show, we just went and saw Dark Shadows yesterday, and Tanner just went and saw The Chernobyl Diaries. So, I mean, all of the movies are supernatural, and there's so many supernatural TV shows, and now the Lego Haunted House, which I truly think means that this is here to stay for a while if people are going to be buying it for their kids for Christmas.
Well, you know, like, you know, I don't necessarily think that, you know, there's anything inherently wrong with it. Personally, for me, I kind of believe that this whole new fascination with ghosts and hauntings and, you know, things that go bump in the night or that run around the woods and can eat you in one gulp, I think that it's all just kind of like a resurgence of spiritualism, only with gizmos and batteries.
Ah, very good. Okay,
I'm not
well,
talking
I just
about sex toys.
I know. I just realized what time it is.
Oh,
yeah. Yes. We need to go to break.
Okay.
And we will be back in a minute with our guest, who is
Mike Roberts.
Mike Roberts, Demented Entertainment. So stick around, Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. We will be right back.
First there came radio, and it was good. Then it got bad. Then there came satellite radio, and it was okay. Then it got too expensive and kind of sucked. Now there is something new, something better, something free. Stitcher Radio for the iPhone and BlackBerry. With Stitcher, you can hear all the shows and podcasts you can imagine, rate them, and build your own station. No downloading, no syncing, no problem. Just pick a station to get started, like American news and politics. Now, look at the shows you have to pick from, pick one, and start listening. Like it, make a favorite, and start your own station. Don't like it? Thumb it down and say bye-bye to shows like it. Or thumb it up to find more like it. Plus, you can search and find your favorite podcasts. We have over 1,000 shows to pick from. Stitcher Radio, the natural evolution in audio listening. And it's free.
Oh. on the go and missing another one of your favorite Z-Talk shows? Now you don't have to. Simply go to the Google Play Store on your Android phone and download the Z-Talk Radio app. The best part is, it's absolutely free. That's Z-Talk Radio, only found in your Google Play Store on your Android phone. Download it today.
If you are a small business owner, you are paying too much for products and services. Do not spend your hard-earned cash on items you can get on trade. UTXTrade.com was formed specifically so you can trade your products or services with other companies on the network for items like advertising, computer repair, office furniture, printing, hotel stays, and much more. For more information, please visit UTXTrade.com. That's UTXTrade.com, a proud sponsor of Paranormal League of America.
In her riveting novel, Break in the Beyond, writer Kim Casey brings to life a supernatural tale filled with mystery, humor, and intrigue. Kim's suspenseful story focuses on Risa, a compassionate social worker who assists Owen, a young psychiatric patient. Is a 300-year-old entity speaking through Owen, or does he simply possess multiple personalities? Visit awningpublishing.ca to order your copy of Breaking the Beyond. That's A-H-N-E-E-N publishing.ca.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
About chemicals in the sky. station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency.
On ZTalkRadio.com. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ZTalkRadio.com. We are your hosts, Karen and Rick. And tonight joining us is going to be Mike Roberts. Now, as I suggested on my Facebook page, if you don't know who he is, obviously you're like the Geico guy and you've been living underneath a rock for the last couple of years. No, however, Mike Roberts is the founder and lead investigator of Research Paranormal, as well as the president, CEO, and Lord High Muckety Muck, practically a little bit on the Vaderish side of Demented Entertainment LLC. So, and, oh, also the author of I Am a Ghost Hunter, which is very much an homage to the great Hans Holzer. So, Mike, welcome to the Underground.
Thanks for having me on. And I'm, you know what? I'm glad you pointed that out right off the bat, that that book was written as an homage and not in any way, shape, or form for people to interpret it as ghost hunters like you're familiar with on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Yes. No, actually,
oh,
I got
that. Would have never even crossed my mind.
I got the book sitting right, not your book, Mike. I did read a little bit of your book, though. A friend of mine actually has it. But, I mean, I've got, you know, Ghost Hunter by Hans Holzer. I'm, like, staring at it right now. Like I said, absolutely. I have a mean man crush on Hans Holzer. But, So, all right, Mike, you know, just to get started with all this, you know, before we get to your book and before we get to, you know, you being the Lord High Muckety Muck of Demented Media, let's talk a little bit about you. Let's go back to the beginning. Like, what got you interested in the paranormal? And, Mike, I will tell you this. We reserve the right to make fun of you if you say anything to the sort of my D&D game loud out early on a Wednesday night and decided to catch a cool new television show on the Sci-Fi Channel. We reserve the right to make fun of you about that. So
right, and that reminds me, because there's a disclaimer that you guys run at the beginning of your show, so I actually have my own disclaimer. You know, in yours where it says that, that the opinions of the guests do not technically reflect the opinions of the network or the show, I have been affirmed off-air at the beginning of the phone call that my opinions are correct and actually do reflect the opinions of the network, just for everybody listening.
Very, very cool.
Good to know. Yes, but not necessarily ztalkradio.com, see?
What I thought was more of a common story about how I got into the paranormal. I had an experience when I was around 8 or 9 years old, which is, you know, I haven't considered myself a paranormal investigator since I was 8 or 9 years old like some, but basically I did have an experience that happened that I wasn't sure about, and at the time, you know, being a kid, it's not like something you can really figure out, but what it did was it got me interested in ghosts. Mm-hmm. And luckily through my childhood growing up with, Ninja Turtles and Ghostbusters, you know, Ghostbusters had a Saturday morning cartoon as well. And so mm-hmm. I was a huge fan all through elementary school, and, they used to have these book fairs. And, during the book fairs, of course, when you're in like third, fourth, and fifth grade, it's always kids' books, and they always had these little Ghostbuster books that had to do with the Saturday morning cartoon show. So I was constantly buying those. And one year, I believe it was around fifth grade, you know, I went into the book fair and I asked for one of those books. And the lady said, you know, we're not carrying them anymore. She says, but I have other books about ghosts. And I was like, well, you know, it's kind of two different things for me at the time. But, she started showing me this book that was, there was two different books, actually. One was like Scary Tales to Tell in the Dark or whatever, and the other one was a picture, a book that had just a bunch of pictures of what were supposedly photos that people had taken of ghosts. And so I got that book, and as I started looking through it, I was like, you know, young, impressionable mind. I'm like, man, you know, people, first of all, how the hell do you stay in a place long enough to take the picture of the ghost? Because I'm going to be out before I have a chance to get my camera ready, you know. And back
then,
I was
like, Scooby-Doo out of there, huh?
Yeah, back then, I was like, okay, here comes a ghost. Let me get the camera out the case. Let me put the film in. Let me wind it up. Let me roll it over to the first frame. You know, it wasn't like you could just pick it up, snap the picture, and get out. So, but being as young and impressionable as I was, you know, I said, well, people have caught pictures of it, and they're saying, and it's published, and, you know, obviously, if it's published, it's true, right?
Not
got my interest.
But...
Yeah.
If it's on the internet, it's true.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh? Hey, look, if TMZ says it, okay.
Yeah, that's right.
Here's the thing. So, that kind of got me turned more towards seeing, like, pictures that were really supposed to be real ghosts. Mm-hmm. And, ultimately, that led me to, years and years later, I started running into instances of picking up more advanced books, and that's when I came across an author by the name of Hans Holzer. I did a lot of reading his books and, you know, didn't pay a whole lot of attention to the types of methods. I just listened. I just liked reading his story. And a local case that had been an urban legend in my town for many, many years, I took it upon myself to go investigate, and during that investigation, some of the facts that I came across actually led me right back to Hans Holzer, because he had come there and investigated it, so I went and read his reports on it, and that kind of started the whole thing for me. Around ninth grade, a friend and I, we started getting a little more, I won't say serious, because it was still kind of ragtag, but... Come 1999, man, we had a full team and we were ready to go. And, you know, we used a lot of the methods that you read about in the books and the stuff that was available at the time.
Sure.
And, that was pretty much the beginning of everything.
But what was the urban legend that got you, you know, pretty much into the whole investigation part of this?
If you go online, you'll find information about this. There was a very famous haunting in my hometown of Wilmington, North Carolina, called the Mako Light.
Okay.
Mako Light is basically the story of a train conductor who, when a train broke down, it decoupled. The front part of the train pulled ahead to the train station, and this conductor stayed on board the other part with a lantern that he was supposed to wave to warn any oncoming trains that they were stuck on the track. And in different variations of the story, different things happened, but his name supposedly was Joe Baldwin, and he couldn't, for whatever reason, get the lantern lit, and the trains collided, which threw him from the train, which also decapitated him, and for years... and this was like a national phenomenon. They had military in there trying to figure this out, but for years, this light above these railroad tracks would appear, and it would swing like a lantern, and it would come down these tracks. Now, they tried to explain it away as, like, you know, swamp gas and will-o-wisp, and nobody ever really had an answer.
Right.
So, they also, back in 1977, pulled the tracks up and said that since the tracks had been removed, nobody had seen this light again. Well, I went down there on a Sunday afternoon, bright, you know, just a regular day. Very hard to get permission because a lot of that area now is like people's backyards, and they just happened to be building an elementary school, and the people that were in charge of building the school allowed me to go across the property to the spot where the tracks used to lie. So I'm back there. You know, we're just kind of taking some photos of the area where the tracks used to be. I get home, and I take a look at something, and, you know, you can call it matrixing, you can call it what it is. I mean, I'm usually pretty good about debunking my own photos, and whether it was matrixing or not, there was something similar in the photo that kind of looked like a train conductor with a hat and everything. So,
really?
I said, well, this doesn't make sense because supposedly this guy lost his head. So... what I ended up doing was I went to the train company that this happened to was called the Atlantic Coastline Railroad. Mm-hmm. And the Railroad Museum right there in Wilmington, which is where their depot was, I went there and I pulled their employee records from day one. And I started doing a method of deduction. First, I looked for an employee named Jill Baldwin, which one never existed. There was a Jill Baldwin who was part of there was a Jill Baldwin who was part of a union of the Union Army. However, he died in battle during the Civil War, and you know, his headstone is in like Virginia or something like that. And because I couldn't find any information on him, I decided to go a different route. I took a look at all of their injury and accident reports. Now, 10 years prior to the first story of Joe Baldwin, so 10 years prior, there was a train accident in the exact same area. It was a guy named Charles Baldwin. And this train, this train had collided with his, which had thrown him from the train, and he suffered a head injury. But he wasn't decapitated. He died 3 days later. He died three days later, according to a coroner's report from a traumatic head injury. And pretty much that was the end of the story. But yet 10 years later, the story of Joe Baldwin comes out. Now, regardless of it being an urban legend or not, that light was there.
Yes,
many many people witnessed that light. President Grover Cleveland, President Grover Cleveland himself saw the lights and wrote.
Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, it seems that we dropped this call.
Are we gone from? No, we're still on the air, but
yeah,
we lost both Karen and
Karen
Mike, which is odd.
Yeah.
I made it back now. What happened? Yeah,
I don't know, but we did lose Mike.
Know.
So let me try. Let me try.
Karen,
and
you never should have looked at the Dybbuk box thing.
Good job, Karen. Okay, here's Mike. I'm ringing Mike right now. Let's keep our fingers crossed.
Okay. Yeah.
Hey, sorry about that, Mike. We lost you there for a second. Skype hates us, and Karen was looking at something about the Dybbuk box online before the show.
That's my fault. Sorry.
That's okay. But like I said, Hans Holzer came there. They had this big fanfare, and he did his investigation. The problem was, is because it was such a largely known phenomena, and they made such a big deal about it, that his investigation was actually tainted, because as he was trying to investigate, thousands of people were showing up waiting to see the light too, or to see what he saw or see what he came up with. So it really affected his investigation. And it was one thing in his book that kind of disappointed me, because, you know, he went and took a lot of eyewitness accounts, and then he just stated a lot of things as fact, and he says, you know, I spoke with this person, and this is a fact, but it just after actually doing the research, we were able to narrow it down that basically it was an urban legend that was built off of an actual incident from 10 years prior, but still to this day, no explanation for the light. And keep in mind that, you know, people have tried to also say that it was automobile headlights. This happened before. These lights were being seen before the invention of the automobile.
Okay. This is Cheryl, because I think we lost Karen and Rick. So, that's good. You are. Okay, you're back.
So, hey, anybody got a good joke? Hans Holzer walked into a bar and nothing.
No. Okay. And I think we lost Mike again.
So something very strange is going on here.
One more time. Okay. I'm going to try and get... please don't give up on us.
Can everybody still hear us?
Let me check with Chad. Hold on. Yeah, they can.
Okay. Mike, I'm not kidding you. This Skype is lucky I'm not packing heat, man. Let me tell you. You know? I would seriously blow
fine.
It away if I had the chance.
You're fine. the last thing I was saying is, you know, there were people who were trying to explain it as automobile lights that could have been passing by off of a nearby highway. However, if you look at the dates from the lights, the first time that the lights were actually spotted, It was prior to the invention of headlights on an automobile.
Well, see, that's just the thing. I mean, there are stories not only in the United States, but you get stories of corpse candles over in England. You get I think they're called the Shishi lights, or I think it's something like that in China. And people do believe that these are spirits, but you also have mainstream science that are like, no, it's, you know, the gas of some fat guy refracting off the light of Venus, right, or whatever. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's definitely, right, unexplained. Might not be paranormal, but definitely unexplained.
Right. And I agree. Like, you know, there very well could have been 20 rational explanations for it, but nobody could seem to come up with one. I'm not saying it's a ghost. I'm not saying that, you know, the Mako light is the ghost of the lantern, nor is it the ghost of the guy looking for a decapitated head or anything. But mm-hmm. something was going on there. It was witnessed. My father, you know, he doesn't really believe in the paranormal. Mm-hmm. But he saw the light as a kid. He was taken up there by his father, and he said that light came close enough that he was actually sitting in a car reading a comic book, and he said the light came up close enough that he could see everything in the car, including the comic book, and then just shot off out of nowhere. And, you know, he said to this day, whether it's a ghost, whether it's alien, whether it's, he said, whatever it is, it's not something that's natural unless it's, you know, can be some form of a will-o-wisp or swamp gas or whatever you want to call it. So it's strange.
You know, this is the thing that always interests me, you know, because you had the Foo Fighters. Now, I'm not talking about the awesome band that's fronted by Dave Grohl. I'm talking about the lights that used to zip in and out of Axis as well as Allied planes. And right. During World War II, now, these pilots would, you know, of course they thought, oh, there's German, no, it's American, no, it's English, and, you know, whatever. Nobody had a proper explanation. Could have been gremlins for all they know. But there is one right. thing that they all agree on. Whatever these things were, they were being guided by an intelligence. And right. that's the way it is with the Mako lights, and that's the way with the other, you know, lights around the world that people see. Like what your dad said, this thing just zipped out.
The difference with the Mako light is it actually had more of like a residual action to it. Like it almost happened the same way every time. It would start off as a faint light. It would move closer. It would start swinging. It would move closer faster. It would swing faster. And then all of a sudden it would just shoot off into the woods.
Okay.
And it acted that way every time. It wasn't necessarily around the same time every day, or a certain time of year, or a certain, you know, there didn't seem to be anything that correlated with that. But when it did happen, it always happened in the same repetitive motion, which would tell you that most likely it's not swamp gas, because, you know, you're never going to be able to ignite gas the exact same way each time.
Correct. I think there's definitely something behind it. You know, another interesting thing, too, is that they have is crop circles in England. I mean, people have actually mm-hmm. filmed a light appearing in a crop right before a circle. I'm sure that's not Doug and Dave, the guys who are going around, you know, doing that allegedly, but people actually have this stuff filmed. And in my opinion, if you have it filmed, if you can prove it's not faked, and if you can see it with your own eyes, then chances are that there is something unusual there.
Right.
Well, and you know,
that's the problem nowadays, is that pretty much anything can be recreated if you have enough technology and enough Hollywood.
Right.
You know, you take the show Fact or Fake, for instance, and, you know, it's a great show. And just because they can spend $1,000 to build an alien puppet that'll blink the same way that it did in somebody else's video doesn't mean that that's what it was. It just means it can be recreated. You know, I personally appeared on Fact or Fake not too long ago, and I've had to, I don't want to say defend, you know, the footage that we've had, but there were a couple things that even Ben himself agreed on. And, you know, we had two pieces of evidence that they looked at. One was a photo. And, you know, I hate that even on when we did this on My Ghost Story, which, by the way, you know, they chop your words up. They'll take sentences and make
It's called the magic of editing.
Right. Well, they'll take stuff that you absolutely didn't say and put it together with stuff to make sentences that just were completely opposite. But besides the fact, you know, I've always said about our photo, I said, I don't know what it is. As far as I know, it could have been a moth flying by when I took it. It just happens to look like a finger, like a hand with an outstretched finger. And I said, you know, some people every once in a while claim they see the skeletal face. I said, and I even pointed it out to them, and you could see me on the episode pointing to it and showing it to them, but they dubbed it over with other audio, and they're like, oh, well, now we'll test the skeletal face. And I was like, I've already told you, there's no skeletal face. That's the two portholes back there, and that's just the way the lighting was. But, right. You know, they were able to recreate the photo enough that I was satisfied that had I done it myself, I would have thrown it out. Their video, you know, obviously, like we told them before, we were not allowing anybody to use flashlights, so there was no way shadows would have been created with flashlights. But the what they looked at in the video is not what made the video for me. The video for me was our investigator was panning to her right when it started moving. When she saw it move, she panned back to the left, and when she stopped, it continued to move, even after she stopped. So we knew it wasn't the light that she was casting. Well, when Fact or Fake came in, you know, first of all, we already told them there was no flashlights, but they took a flashlight and they shine it around and they cast some shadows and say, well, you know, that looks close enough, so we think that's what it is. Mm-hmm. One thing that they didn't take into consideration, and if you go back and watch the episode and compare our footage to theirs, one, yes, they created a shadow in the same spot where our shadow was. Number one, it did not have the range of motion. It didn't move as far right and left as ours did, but ours was solid. You could see through their shadow because it was being created by a flashlight, and you could see through it all the way to the shiny metal reflective objects in the background, and on our video, you couldn't see through it at all. And had there been an actual person there in front, the IR illuminator would have illuminated them. You would have been able to see that it was an actual person standing there. So just because it can be recreated doesn't mean that that's, you know, how things went down. But sometimes it's, you know, anything. I mean, look, let's face it. Movies like Paranormal Activity have basically proven that any video evidence you turn in, it can be recreated Hollywood style. And that's exactly what they'll say you did, whether it was legitimate or not.
See, and that's just the thing. I mean, unlike Karen, I've never done any television. I do believe that several people have fatwas out on my head right now and have, you know, declared jihad on me. But, okay, it's like this. If I had tens of thousands of dollars and the upper echelon of the sci-fi backing my ass up, I could probably recreate, you know, the Gray Lady of Raynham Hall, for example.
Well,
although
they
I believe that's legit.
Lengths to recreate on Factor
Sure.
Page. They do.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Right.
So, and they do have the Destination Truth as well. They go to great lengths to recreate things.
They do. And what they miss out on by doing that is, you know, they go there and they recreate it, but at the same time, they get the same personal experiences, quote unquote, that we got. When we were there, I mean, during Factor Fake, they had their camera, and I'm talking like a really nice DSLR camera that was secured. We hear this really loud noise. They go over there, and their camera's busted. It has come off of a shelf and gone about 10 or 15 feet away, and it hit the ground so hard that it actually chipped the paint on the floor. Now, people that don't know the battleship will say, oh, well, you know, it sits on water and it rocks. Listen. The battleship North Carolina does not sit in the ocean. It's off the side of a riverbank, and it's in about 200 feet of mud. It's not going anywhere. That boat does not rock. They couldn't drag that boat out with a towboat if they wanted to.
Okay. Yeah, that's... Let me ask you this, though, Mike. Do you think that these shows are actually out to... I don't really like using the term debunk because I think it's used incorrectly often, but you know, people, they want to disprove. Do you think that they're out to prove these things exist, or do you think they're out to disprove that they exist.
You are now let's rephrase this question, because you're asking me about television shows, not actual investigators, correct?
Correct. I'm asking because I know that you do have, you know, you do play quite a big part in some of these shows. I mean, are they out to prove or disprove this stuff?
This is where there's a fine line. They're really not out for either. They're okay. out for entertaining. They're out to entertain an audience, because if they don't, their show will get canceled. The fact of the matter is a person who's really out to prove or disprove, first of all, you don't do that by going into a location for a night or two and then making a determination. You have to go into a location for multiple. I mean, we have one particular location that we go into once every 3 months, you know, that we've been doing for 5 years, and still haven't tried to draw a conclusion, because we want to see how consistent the activity is. I mean, let's just say you go into a place that has the most activity that you've ever seen happen all that one night that you're there, and you go out and you make a claim and you say, this by far is the most haunted place on the planet. But guess what? What if that one night that you were there is the only night it happened? Does that really qualify it to be that? Because
no.
It could have been something just passing through.
Right. Well, even at that, for the next year, it's like, you know, we're talking about the most haunted place on the planet. So I'm expecting, like, you know, if you tell me Walmart's the busiest store in town, I know that when I go in there, there's going to be a lot of people no matter what day I go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so to make a claim that a place is the most haunted, I'm expecting that if I go in there, something is going to happen. And I'll tell you, and you know, I've tried to protect the feelings of a lot of locations. You know, obviously we do a lot of events, and I don't like to burn any bridges or anything.
Right.
But I will say, you know, there have been a lot of locations that have been overhyped, and a lot of locations that, because of television shows, they're raking in a lot of business. But I'll tell you, in my personal opinion and my one-night experience, I did not get attacked, possessed, or have a single blip on of equipment or catch an EVP the night that I was at Bobby Mack.
Well, that's because you're not Zach Bagans. So.
Yeah, I knew that's where you were going. I have heard enough people who've been to Bobby Mackey's say things about it, though, that I tend to think that there's at least some grain of truth to the Bobby Mackey stuff. It may not be as, you know, absolutely awesome as you would see on Ghost Adventures or anything, but
you're talking ratings and entertainment. You got to keep the audience's attention.
Absolutely.
But I will tell you this: out of this month, we're actually going into, this is our 13th year of Research Paranormal, and in those 13 years, thank you. In those 13 years, I've seen two massive things that I can't explain. One, they're both written about in the book, but one is at an old meat packing plant in North Carolina, a meat packing plant. It was a slaughterhouse for animals and a meat packing plant. And I saw something there that, you know, I thought I would never see again. And the next thing that I did not see anything else. I saw that probably in 2001, 2002. And I did not see another thing that equaled or rivaled or satisfied a craving until about 2010, when I went to Sloss Furnace. Now, I know that sounds cliche, and I said the same thing. I purposely set up an event at Sloss Furnace because I got tired of people saying, Sloss Furnace this, Sloss Furnace that, and Possess this, and we saw this. And I said, this is another overhyped location that nothing is going to happen. And I will tell you that in between rotating groups, a group got off somehow. So it was me and three other people standing around for about 20 minutes with nothing else to do. And we decided to walk down the breezeway, and we all saw it. We encountered what we felt was the closest thing to a full body apparition that any of us had seen. It was less than 10 feet in front of us. It shot directly at our face and then took off to the right through a brick wall. I have never in my life, and you know what? I had a video camera running, and you can actually hear my reaction. It was so dark, and you're talking, you know, 300 yards. It's really hard for a camera to focus without proper lighting. And I'm running two IRs, and what I kept doing is, as I'm walking down, there's these little train tracks. So I would point the camera down at the train tracks to bring it back in focus and then bring it back up, and it would stay in focus for a few minutes and then go out. And I actually caught this thing coming at us, but because when I held it up, the camera went so far out of focus, it looks like a big glowing ball, like a sun, comes shooting at us. And it, even on video, even that part of it, the way it's moving and the way it comes at us looks supernatural. And if I didn't know any better, I would think somebody was messing with us with a movie projector. But being that this was my event, and I knew that wasn't the case, and I was very disappointed that the video didn't look like what we physically saw with our eyes. But I was also glad that I was able to capture what I did, because I know for a fact that it wasn't my eyes playing tricks on me, because there is something on this video that I can't explain, a big bright ball of whatever, and that is what we saw. And I said, I remember when I put it up on the screen and we're going frame by frame, and I said, if I hit the button to unpause this and this is where all of us screamed at the same time, that's it. This isn't just a piece of bug or dust. That's what it was. And as soon as I hit that button, man, you heard it. All of us screamed. I mean, it was the first time that something ever stopped me dead in my tracks. I didn't know what to do.
Yeah, it's like, you know, we were talking a little bit, I think it was like maybe a week or two ago. My family is originally from Huntsville, Alabama. And there's two things that people in Alabama know, that Lynyrd Skynyrd is the greatest rock band of all time. And two, Slossifernus, you don't go there because it's scary as hell. Right. Even my 94-year-old grandfather will say, yeah, you don't go there. It's a bad place, and they all know it down there.
I go to Slossifernus once a year. We're actually going to be there next month. We've got a really good lineup for that. And, you know, we sell tickets to those events, and you know, we didn't experience, I personally didn't experience anything there last year, but the lady supposedly actually literally got attacked. And when she came up, when they came and got me, like, because I was sitting there thinking, oh crap, lawsuit, you know. And when this lady came up, I mean, she had gouges on her back, she had a knot on her head. I mean, it was pretty nasty. She had blood. I mean, I was just freaking out. Her account of what happened was that she started to walk away from the group. She felt something grab her from behind and shove her down, and there was nobody else around her. And the next thing, you know, it looked like scrapes, but the average person, you know, at that event was trying to tell me they were claw marks and all this kind of stuff. And I'm just like, you know, I don't know what it is, but we did have her sign off on a waiver before she came in, so we're good.
CYA, that's what it's all about, man.
But, you know, in all honesty, you know, I look forward to going to Slossifernus every year. And I did think it was funny because, like I told you, I caught that on video. And originally the show My Ghost Story had contacted me about, you know, doing the story about Slossifernus, which obviously we ended up doing the Battleship North Carolina. But everything went through with Slossifernus until the people who own Slossifernus said the one thing that I never thought I'd hear come out of their mouth. And that was, we're a historic landmark, and we don't want to be known for being a haunted location. And I'm sitting here like, okay, you let Ghost Adventures come here and shoot an entire episode. You've let Ghost Hunters come here and shoot an entire episode. There's been several documentaries. And now you're telling me that the guy from My Ghost Story can't walk through with a camera and get 10 minutes of B-roll footage? Because you don't want to know.
They had a change in the board or something.
No, because I turned around a week later and booked our paranormal event. And now here it's coming up. We're doing our paranormal event.
That's
so, it's weird. Some of these places are like, well, we want to know for being historic, not haunted. I think you want to be known for whatever's going to keep your place in business. And if, you know, if the place is legitimately haunted and that's what people are interested in, you know, I guarantee you Slossifernus gets a lot more people visiting there because they think the place is haunted than they do because they want to go back there and play with some hot steel and, you know, make a belt buckle.
Yes, I actually have a location right now that I know to be haunted where the board doesn't want it being identified as a haunted place. They want it being identified for the historic.
Oh, there's a ton of them.
I tell them, you know, people will pay to come investigate this place.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
And look, I respect that you want it to be historic, you know, I really do. And I could care less whether you're going to let me come in and do an event or do an investigation. I was like, but you know what? Sometimes, considering, like, particular locations, whether they've been written about in books, whether they've been investigated or not as being haunted, that is part of your history.
It is.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that any kind of, like, haunting or anything, like, really does make that history come alive, especially when you can back that haunting up with historical research.
Exactly. Like Fort Mifflin, dude. You go to mm-hmm. Fort Mifflin, you get some great stuff at Fort Mifflin, and guess what that traces back to? The Revolutionary War. The fort saved America, that allowed George Washington to gather his troops, you know?
Yeah.
So I would say the paranormal and history. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They go hand in hand.
I think it's funny, too, that a lot of these places are you know, considered the scariest places on Earth, and yet they don't want to be known as haunted, but they have, you know, the souvenir shop, and you can get bobblehead ghosts or whatever. obviously, they're in it for something. Me, personally, I'm extremely skeptical when I hear of a place that, you know, we're historical and yet we're still haunted, but we don't want to be known as haunted. Mm-hmm. I'm very skeptical about that because, let's face it, man, ghosts sell, especially nowadays.
Oh, they do. And you know, but I will say the paranormal stuff is on a decline, which is good and bad. It's good because your weekend warrior armchair, hey, I watched Ghost Hunters Wednesday, I'm going to start a paranormal team Thursday. You know, people are finally starting to kind of weed themselves out and starting to get back to people who are a little more, you know, credible for doing actual research. So that's a plus. Yeah. The bad thing is that, you know, a lot of these places that are relying, like places like Waverly Hills, I mean, you know, Waverly Hills relies on the paranormal. They don't have another source of income. And what they did to the paranormal community, and, you know, they get upset with me for saying this all they want to, but this can be the controversial part of your show tonight.
It won't be the first.
No, you know, here's the thing. If it hadn't have been for the paranormal community, Waverly Hills would be a parking lot.
Mm.
And,
instead of a
soon-to-be
hotel.
And you know what? The people who saved Waverly Hills are the same people that they turn around and have treated like dirt. You know, I can go do an event on the battleship North Carolina. I could do an event at Sloss Furnace. I can do this. And it's only a quarter of the price that Waverly Hills wants
Waverly
to charge.
Is
and what,
ridiculously expensive.
And what are they charging for? Because you can tell. How many years have they been doing this now? Have they fixed a single even broken window in that place? No, the money's not going to the location, and you're ripping off the same people that saved you from being a parking lot. So we appreciate that, Waverly.
Yeah.
You know, hey, Mike, I think what we're going to do is we're coming up here to the top of the hour. What we're going to do is we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I think we want to talk a little bit about Demented Media, about your business.
About the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Michael Bay.
You said Michael. I wasn't allowed to say certain words, so you might not want to bring that subject up.
Michael Bay, I'm letting you know right now, if you listen to internet radio, Mike Roberts and I, we're declaring a fatwa on your head, and you're done. So
I issued the public challenge right now. I publicly challenge Michael Bay to a boxing match, and may the winner direct the film.
Oh, okay.
I can see that. I can see that, and we'll sell ghost head bobblehead dolls for that.
There you go. So, but we have to go to break before the boxing match. So let's do this. We'll go to break. We'll come back in just a minute or two, and we'll move on to other topics. So this is Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever.
Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com. Hi everyone, it's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at Paranormal UG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Your assignment is to listen to The Buzz on Monday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Central on ztalkradio.com.
I know what you are. You drive too fast, you smell so good, and you dress fashionably well.
Say it out loud.
You're a metrosexual?
Oh, why do I always get that? I'm a radio show host.
Kale, I want to be one of them.
And you can be. Join me on ztalkradio.com, 9 p.m. Eastern on Sunday nights. The show's called Perspective.
Hey, do you sparkle?
Oh my God, don't even start. Hang on, Spider Monkey.
Thank you.
You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. We're back. This is Karen and Rick on Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. For the last hour, we've been talking to Mike Roberts of Research Paranormal as well as Demented Entertainment. Hey, Mike, thanks for sticking around for another hour of this of our little part of the paranormal universe.
Yeah, I suppose.
So, you know, we touched a little bit on before we went on break, the events that you put on. Demented Entertainment, first off, very cool name for the business. Secondly, how were you able to, you know, all of a sudden become the Jerry Maguire of the paranormal world? What happened there?
Oh, man, this is actually a story that's longer than it sounds. It wasn't just an overnight thing. For the people that don't know, I was a musician. I was a hip-hop artist that toured the country nationally for 13 years. Mm-hmm. Under the name Demented, I used to do shows with Wu-Tang Clan and Ice-T, 2 Live Crew, 3-6 Mafia, Insane Clown Posse. You named it. I probably did shows with them, opened for them, toured with them, cool. Whatever. I got approached. I was actually signed by a record label, which was Hollywood Records, which turns out that, you know, was the same record label that Hillary Duff was signed to. So you can imagine that was a perfect match. My music was a little bit edgy and controversial, and they knew that. They actually came to one of our shows and saw that in the beginning we had a girl run out in a bikini and get chopped up by a guy with a chainsaw. So they knew what they were in for. And after releasing the album, it got pulled off shelves, and they told us that in order to stay on the record label, that we'd have to take the music more mainstream. And we were going to, because I was just excited about being signed to a record label. And they went to go do a music video shoot, and I told them, I said, look, if I'm going to do a music video, it's not going to be just any video. I want it to be like Michael Jackson's Thriller, you know, this big story in the beginning, he turns into a werewolf, it's got zombies. No, I want an epic video. So yeah. They're like, okay, start scripting out this video. So I did. It got to be about 13 pages long. We get on set, and one of the producers for the music video, which happened to be Jeff Daniels, which is the guy from Dumb and Dumber, and
you're kidding me.
He approaches me and he says, you know what, I like the storyline and the script. He's like, why don't we just walk away from this? He's like, and develop this script and turn it into a film. He's like, it'll make a great horror film. And I said, well, I don't know anything about filmmaking. He says, no, it's fine. You direct it. We'll raise the money for it. You know, write it, direct it, we'll do it. Man, we did, and it's got to, I'll tell you, we finished that movie. I'm proud and accomplished. You know, I feel accomplished. We started shooting in 2007. It took till 2011 to get released. It is the shittiest movie to ever hit the market. It was done terribly. We had amateur cameras. We had, obviously, myself, not amateur cameras. We shot it on pro cameras. It was amateur people running the cameras. Okay. And a person who knew nothing about directing, and you could probably do some creative edits and turn it into a very campy comedy. So what happened at that point was, when I would sit down to try to write new music, it turned out that I couldn't do it anymore. Like, everything that I wrote, I was like, oh, this will make a better short film. You know, let me do a short film and get my director skills on.
Sure.
And that's what happened. So I actually started a company called Demented Films. And we had an office at Screen Gem Studios. And, you know, we shot a bunch of short films and had some award-winning short films and went on to do some other projects and so forth and so forth. Now, in the meantime, I'm still doing my paranormal thing. I'm being booked, going around as a guest speaker. And for some people, they felt like I just kind of came out of nowhere. A couple years ago, a campaign was started called Who the Hell is Mike Roberts? And it was meant as a joke. And for some reason,
I get that
reason,
all the time, Mike.
Well, you know, but the thing is like, it caught on. And a Facebook page was made for it. And before I knew it, there was like 3,000 people following it and making these jokes. And it was all because Alexandra Holzer, Hans Holzer's daughter, who was like a blood sister to me, you know, convince me that I should have Facebook and I should have MySpace and I should have Twitter and whatnot. So I started getting a little bit more in the public eye and going out and speaking at these conventions. And in the meantime, because people thought I had done this and come out of nowhere, that if I had done that much for myself, that I could do that for them. Now, my strong point was promotion. I was in a band, dude. I was signed to a record label by the time I was 17 years old. Okay. And that was because I promoted myself properly. I did what I had to do to get my name out there, get my music heard by the top record executives in the country. Mm-hmm. And so I've always had that kind of attitude. So I remember 2 years ago, and this is real funny that our Research Paranormal 13-year anniversary is in the same month as what's going to be the 2-year anniversary for Demented Entertainment. But about 2 years ago, I was sitting in a hotel room on the road, and I was talking with Donna LaCroix from Ghost Hunters. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she had been off the show for a while, but she was wanting to start doing events again. And she said, well, why don't you, you know, you've done so much for yourself, why don't you start doing this, and, you know, it'll be beneficial for you and everybody else for you to start doing this. And I said, well, you know, I'm not really cut out to manage other people. Like, I'm too anal retentive. I couldn't even teach her how to drive a stick shift without trying to chop your head off. So after a few days of thinking on it, you know, Rob Damaris from Ghost Hunters International and Andy Andrews from Ghost Hunters International and Brandy Green and a few others, you know, kind of convinced me to do it. And I called Donna and I said, look, since it's your idea, I said, I'll sign you as my first client, and let me try to book you some gigs and see how it works. That happened to be a particular weekend that I was heading down to New Orleans for an event, and all of a sudden, my phone was going off nonstop. And it wasn't people looking to book Donna LaCroix. It was people looking for representation. I got 80 freaking phone calls for people that were already rep by other people but weren't happy or, you know, wanted to just come over and get this. I had, you know, XYZ paranormal team that felt like they needed a manager. And I told myself, I'm going to start off with 5 clients, see what I can do for them. And if I can't do anything, then at least I haven't invested a lot in it. Before I knew it, I had 40 clients. Then I had 60 clients. Then the horror people started showing up. You know, I started getting people like Adrian King from Friday the 13th, Danielle Harris from Halloween, Betsy Rue from My Bloody Valentine and True Blood. And then most recently, like my favorite signing, the biggest signing that I've done recently is Michael Biehn. And this guy is, you know, this guy played Kyle Reese in The Terminator. He was an alien. He played Johnny Ringo in Tombstone, which is like one of my favorite movies. He's the one that, you know, him and Val Kilmer, I'm your Huckleberry. This is the guy. Yeah. And I'm like, wow, these people are really, you know, interested in working with me. And they think I can do stuff for them. And before I knew it, I have over 80 clients. And we have a very successful time throwing events and getting our clients booked out. And it's been a really long but a unique adventure.
Yeah. We've had a lot of your clients on the show. I was just looking through your clients on your website, and boy, we've had a lot of them on our show, and so you've got some pretty good clients.
Yeah, and you know, it, just like with anything, you know, we gain some clients and we lose some clients, and you know, sometimes we can't book stuff for everybody. I mean, it's a matter of maybe they're not well known enough that places aren't willing to afford to pay their travel and hotel because they know that they won't make it back in ticket sales, or it could be that you got some people that are asking for a lot more money than what people are willing to pay them. And, you know, so sometimes people can be very prima donna with their terms and conditions. And, you know, while we'll still put it out there, a lot of the times they're not going to get booked, and somehow or another that's our fault. But we do attempt to try to sell them, so...
Yeah. Sure. Well, you get like those writers, you know, where they're like, I want green M&Ms, man, and if I find a brown M&M in there, I'm going to kill you, you know. Do you have anything like that? Probably not, right?
No, you know, sometimes we'll have some weird stuff like that. About the worst that we have right now, and I won't say worst because, I mean, I understand the situation, but like, if I could, I'd book Alexandra Holzer on everything I do. Like I said, she's like a sister to me, and You know, I understudied her father, and we have such strong ties. And the problem is that on top of paying for her travel and her airfare and appearance fees for being away from home, which is hard for her because she has diabetic children and stuff, the fact that getting her back and forth to the airport. Now, she lives far enough from the airport that it cost me $150 each way to get her to the airport. So no matter what the flight and everything else costs, I have $300 additional dollars in car service just getting her back and forth to the airport, which sometimes makes it where I can't afford to have her out, because a lot of these events are based on how many tickets we sell. And, you know, a person, you know, it's hard to say. If somebody is charging $500 for an appearance fee, okay, and then you figure in their flight, which is going to be $300-$400, and their hotel at another $100, so figure the average person is going to cost you about $1,000. Well, if you have a $100 ticket, then that means 10 people have to buy a ticket specifically for that person, or else I'm taking a loss just by having them on the event.
Right.
But the problem is it can't stop there. Because buying 10 tickets is the exact same as me not having them on the event at all. I mean, it's just breaking it even. So it would be doing the exact same thing. So really, they have to draw more. They would have to draw 15 for it to be a benefit. And the problem right now is, you know, with the economy and with everybody's got things going on all the time, you know, the attendance for the events, they're getting lower and lower, and the TV shows are getting canceled, or the cast members from the TV shows are getting replaced, and they're not drawing like they used to. And so we run into a lot of problems, but we do make the best of it. And, you know, we love the people who come out to the events, and all of our people, especially, you know, the ones like Ben Hansen. And Ben's a great guy, and people love Ben, and he's just great with people. We had him at that one at outside of Las Vegas last month, and I couldn't have been more prouder. You know, I couldn't have been more proud of Ben.
But he gets a lot of flack. I mean, you know, and that's another thing that you and I, you know, a question that I asked you through Facebook, actually. He gets a lot of flack from people, and a lot of things that I've read in the forums, they talk about, well, Ben Hansen was not really an FBI agent. You set the record straight with me, so let me just ask you, is he an FBI agent? Or was he?
Yeah, Ben Hansen absolutely was a former FBI agent. And there are actually, you know, the FBI keeps really good records of people who were employed. You know, he was not an X-Files guy. He was not David Duchovny. He did work for the FBI. That information is accessible. And, you know, Ben does have to constantly find himself defending that, but the information is there for somebody that, you know, really wants to go look for it. Ben absolutely did work for the FBI.
Okay. See, there we go, ladies and gentlemen, record straight. And it was, you know what, Mike, and I'm going to admit to you, it was set for me too, because I was extremely skeptical, because I'm 38 years old. That guy, he does not look like he's any older than 32, and
he looks like he's in his 20s.
that too.
And you know, Ben's a little bit older than I am, and I'm 33. And you know, it wasn't like he was a lifetime FBI employee. You know, I don't want to quote anything and be wrong, but I do think that he worked with the FBI for about 6 years. You know, and I mean, how old do you have to be an FBI agent? I mean, there are people right now that are 24 years old working for the FBI. So his age is actually, you know, kind of irrelevant to whether or not he could be an FBI agent. But yes, Ben is a former FBI agent. That was not a plot or a storyline or a made up fact. And he is still registered with that particular branch of the FBI, even though he is no longer employed by them.
Cool. Well, thank you for setting that record straight, not only for myself, but for, you know, many of our listeners as well. So let's talk about events. Now, I know you put on a lot of events. You know, can you, you know, run us through what a lot of events, I know. I mean, you're like the busiest man in paranormal entertainment, it seems. But run us through from like the very beginning. I mean, does it take a lot to go to I don't know, Bumble F Idaho or whatever to their most haunted spot. They're like, hey, man, we want to put on an event. What can you do for us? I mean, how does it start?
You know, it does, because number one, especially if you're calling a place that you have no prior relationship with, they don't know how it's being run. They don't know what to expect. They don't know what your real reasonings are. But there's a lot of factors. You know, you have to, what most people, and I see it happening, and I know that I'm just a regular guy, man. And this may even come across a little bit conceited, but I know a lot of people look at things and say, well, you know, if Mike Roberts did it, I mean, I can do it. It's easy. It's not easy. It's a very stressful job, especially when it's just you. I don't have a series of employees that I have working for me. I handle all 80 of my clients myself. I spend 24 hours a day on the phone. But besides handling them, I'm constantly making phone calls to locations and pitching them our events. But there's things that you have to keep in mind. Number one, and this is like the biggest thing that event coordinators do that they forget, make sure that you're not doing your event while somebody else is doing their event the same weekend the next town over, or it's going to hurt your ticket sales. It's going to, you know, it's going to oversaturate. That's number one. Number two is when you're dealing with a location. If it's a location that's had an event there before and it's been successful, then fine. You know, talk to them, set it up, agree to their rate, and do it. Because trust me, people think we make a lot of money doing these events. I can tell you, so far since January, I am negative $16,000 on events. Okay?
Wow.
I'm not the one that makes the money. Our clients, they make money, but they're not the ones making the big bucks. The big bucks,
the
people who are making the money, are the location.
Yeah,
they
the
are
venue.
Because they're charging flat rates. They don't care whether you have one person show up or 10, but, you know, we get people like Ben Hansen who does this because he loves it. And Ben has a rate that he needs because, you know, he has to take time away from work and time away from home and then go do a convention when he's supposed to be resting before he goes out and filming. But Ben's also the type of guy that says, you know what, if 20 people showed up, dude, don't worry about trying to cover my appearance fee. Let's just have fun. And that's what I like about Ben so much. But
that's very respectable.
You know, it is. And I have a few clients that are like that. But I also have ones that nobody will show up, and then they'll come up to me the first before the event even starts and go ahead and ask for their check. You know, I mean, that's just how they are.
That's just rude, man.
It,
I mean,
it's like, hey, I know nobody showed up to see me. Nobody came. But I'm going to go ahead and need that check. And I'm like, sure, I'm the guy that writes them the check anyway. But, you know, and I do it because I'm a person who sticks to my word, and it's put me in the hole. But the thing is like, what I try to do is, like, if it's a location that's never had an event before, I tell them, look, we're dipping our toe in the water here. We're testing the market. We don't know if it's going to be a success. Will you do it for a percentage of ticket sales? That way, if we sell 10 tickets, we can still have the event. You guys still get the promotion. We don't have to worry about canceling. But if we do a flat rate and then we don't make enough money and you guys are paid, but I don't have enough money to fly my people in and I have to cancel an event, it's going to look bad on me. This way, it's a win-win situation.
Yeah.
Another thing to keep in mind is location, location, location. It's not about what's the most haunted place. It's about what's the most accessible place, because people come from miles around, which means these places need to be close to airports. They need to be close to, you know, heavily populated areas, because like we learned with this one outside of Las Vegas, you know, it was 40 minutes outside. So you could fly into Las Vegas. That was the closest. But you also had to get a rental car. You had to carpool. If you tried to take a taxi, it's $160. So, I mean, you know, it's if we would have had the event in Vegas where there was already a lot of people, our turnout probably would have been triple. But the thing is like, you know, even with this one coming up, I'm doing an event next week. It's just me. It's at Catfish Plantation. It's a cheap event. It's $59, but you get a free hard copy, like a paperback copy of my book with the ticket. So that's like a $20. You're basically paying $39 to come do an overnight investigation with me at Catfish Plantation. it's a cool place. It's not far from Dallas. It's like a 45-minute drive. It's, you know, it's kind of centrally located, but you're mostly going to get locals because it's not close enough to the airports. It's not close enough to the bigger cities that, you know, it's easy for people to get to. They're going to actually have to plan this out. They're going to have to carpool. They're going to have to drive. They're going to have to whatever. So there's a lot of planning. And like I said, you got to find the best flights. And sometimes just because you find the best rates, I've got clients that won't fly certain airlines. So I'm like, you know, well, it's $330 for me to fly you on this one. But since you won't fly this airline, this ticket over here is $800. You know, can I take this out of the appearance fee you're charging me? Because this is costing me additional money. Mm-hmm. You know, finding prices for lodging, for hotel, you know, feeding people, you know, catering to everybody's needs. You know, when we're doing these events, I don't just fly them in and stick them in the hotel. I'm in the hotel with them. Even if it's in my hometown, I'll sit in the hotel and I say, if you need anything, call me. Boom, I'll drive you to the store. I'll go and get your latte. I'll go get you a cheeseburger from McDonald's at 2:00 in the morning if that's what you want. I cater. I make sure everybody's taken care of.
And those green M&Ms, man.
That's right. But we have not had any of the crazy requests for things like that, except for, I think, you know, there's been a preference on, you know, what kind of vehicle, what types of vehicles we've brought people to the event in. Like, you know, everybody knows that I won in a contest, in a drawing. I won a Kia Soul a few years ago, or last year. It's actually been a year. June 1st, I've had that car for a year. I put 30,000 miles on it. Yay! It had 14 when I got it.
Congratulations.
Thank you. People love riding in my Kia Soul. So sometimes if I go to an event and I didn't drive my car, like I flew and I get a rental car, like they'll request that I get a specific type of rental car if I don't have my Kia Soul with me. People, for some reason, my Kia Soul needs its own Facebook page. Every person that's been at these events, these celebrities, you should see the grins and the smiles when they get in the Kia Soul and say, damn, this isn't a small car at all. You could fit like 20 people. Dude, we had 5 people in there, including Ben Hansen, who's like 6'6".
It's like a clown car.
It is. It really is. It's like a small SUV. It looks small, but when you're inside, it feels huge. That's what she said, and that's going in my book.
But I'm...
Actually, I was going to say that. You know, you really should, you know, come here to Chicago sometime. I mean, we have a couple of, you know, things that go on here. I've never actually been to them. But I know that we have one recently that was put on by Ursula Bielski, who is, you know, not only is she incredibly cute, but she's also amazingly knowledgeable, as well as Troy Taylor, who's, you know, he's too busy being awesome for the most part.
Right.
But, you know, this... Here in Chicago, I mean, our city is built on, you know, bullets, broads, and booze, man.
Right,
you know, it's
right. And mobsters, and you know, yeah. I wanted to do one in Chicago, and I actually got in touch with Ron Fabiani, you know, the guy from the Paranormal Cops or whatever, and I talked to him, and I was like, look, man, I said, you know, I'm not familiar with that area up there. I've never been to Chicago. Mm-hmm. I said, but give me a location of, you know, give me the names of some friendly places and let me put an event together, man, and I'll throw you guys on it. And that was the last I heard from him. I mean,
I can give you 5 right now.
Well, a buddy of mine went up there recently and investigated with a paranormal team. I think he said they were called Chips or something like that. And he said that, you know, they've been around for a long time. They're a respectable team. I've never heard of them, but it's so hard for me to keep up with the paranormal teams that their website domains expire, you know, their team is gone before their website domain expires.
Yeah.
It's just so hard to keep up with, but, you know, I'd like to come up because my idea for what I wanted to do in Chicago was that we would have the location for 2 nights, and on the first night, we would have a mob party. We'd have everybody dress up in, like, the 1940s, like, swinger, you know, zoot suit type
more
clothing.
More like 20s or 30s,
and play the music and try to get the place riled up and then come back and do the event Saturday night after we've riled everything up and see how that affects stuff. And I've had that idea, you know, for a while. We just haven't found a place, number one, that was reasonably priced or that would work with us on a percentage or a place that was big enough to hold the amount of people that we'd like to see there.
try the Palmer House. It's right downtown Chicago. I've never actually stayed there, but I have been in there. And I will admit, yes, I am sensitive. And up on the third floor, man.
Well, I'll try not to say anything that'll hurt your feelings.
I know. I was wondering if he was going to start crying as he was talking or something.
No, but, you know, it's like up on the third floor. It's weird. You feel something. What now?
Nothing.
We're making fun of you being sensitive. We're not. Oh. We're going to try not to hurt your feelings.
No, yeah. but up on the third floor, you do kind of get the sense that, you know, I mean, if you do have those kind of abilities, you know, it's kind of like it's a feeling of intense sadness. And I mean, if you're looking for a place that is well documented of being haunted, the Palmer House down near the Magnificent Mile is the place you might want to check into. So
I'll definitely take a look into it. I'm always into, always into looking into to new locations. And actually, one of the things that we just started, and word's starting to get around, is we started this paranormal peer review center, and we're hoping that a lot of the submissions that we get from that is going to help with that too. But the point of it is, peer review has been missing from the paranormal field for quite some time. And
it wasn't even there to begin with.
Well, here's the thing, this is a way that the evidence not only will be documented in logs for future reference, and then that way if it pops up on websites later, we can always say, well, it was signed off on by this panel. Now, this panel that we've put together, it's coming together nicely. But so far, besides myself, we have Lloyd Auerbach. We have Mark Bacuzzi, who is another parapsychologist. And we just brought on Dr. Barry Taff as well.
Oh, now,
we love Barry. We love him. He's been on the show several times.
Now, these are our paranormal panel. Then we have a second panel, which is actually we have representatives from the camera companies, such as Kodak, Canon. We have a FLIR thermal engineer. These are people who can look at the photos and videos and tell you whether they're actual manufacturer flaws or whether they're malfunctions. So you get a paranormal side, you get that side. Then, on top of all of that, once the panels have come together and made a decision, it'll be put out to the community. The community will have a chance to say whether they agree with the panel's decision or not by answering yes or no. If they answer no, there'll be a box that specifically says, please explain why you feel this decision was not, relevant to this particular piece of evidence. And if enough people say no and overturn, then it'll go back for a second opinion through the panel. If not, then if everybody is under agreement, you're talking a panel of paranormal, you're talking a paranormal of technical experts, you're talking the entire paranormal community as a whole, we all agree whether it's evidence or not, it gets serial numbered, it gets put away, and then that way, if a video pops up on YouTube that says, hey, we caught this, it was legitimate activity, blah, 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 has it been reviewed by the Paranormal Review Center? And if it has, then it's been signed off on a sheet by this panel and every single one of those persons' name. You'll be able to look at it. You'll look at a file that's signed off on by Lloyd, by Barry, by Mark, by myself, by the, Canon, Kodak, FLIR Thermal Imaging. And if all of those people have agreed that they believe that's anomaly, then guess what? Now's your time to be able to put that on your webpage as evidence. But don't be throwing shit up on YouTube and Facebook and whatnot, calling it evidence and, saying, well, if you look real close and zoom in 10,000 times, you see a face. Yeah.
Yeah.
The orb has a face in it,
With the sheer amount of paranormal groups collecting what they believe is evidence, how on earth are you going to triage that?
Yeah, how do you get people on board,
Well, here's the thing. It's not about whether they want to bring the evidence to us or not. If the evidence gets brought to us by somebody else that it's been shown to, because I don't know if you guys are like me, but as a paranormal investigator, I'll get an email that's always like, okay, so a friend of mine got this photo from a friend of hers that was at a party of a friend of a friend that took this photo, and this, can you help me explain it? And I say, yes, I can. It's an iPhone app that you add a ghost into the photo. But here's the thing. If it gets brought before us, whether we can get the original person's name who did the photo or not, the photo will still go under review and be documented. If we come across it on the internet, we will take it upon ourselves to peer review it until, you know, if the owner of the person who took the photo or video comes forward, then cool, we'll explain it to them and we'll allow them to try to appeal and we'll throw it under another review. But there are so many people out there. You know as well as I do, you can log into Facebook right now, and in your newsfeed, there'll be 10 posts of people posting their paranormal photos, and all you have to do is say, you know what, I know this hasn't been reviewed, and send it over. We'll review it. And what started this was a guy who posted a photo recently that said that there was a face of a child in the bottom right-hand corner of this window. And I knew right off the bat that there was a tree right outside this window causing the reflection, and I could plainly see the leaves. And I downloaded the photo, I put it through an analysis, and all I had to do was hit invert, man, and boom, there you could see it. It was tree leaves, plain as day. Yeah. So I go back and I read the comments, and this guy not only claims that he himself, now, and I know this guy personally, but he claims that he himself is a professional photographer, and that they took it to four other professional photographers who have all said that this is confirmed that this is a face. And he put on there, everybody shut up, it's complete, it's final, it's determined, professionals have determined that this is indeed the face of a ghost child. And I said, okay. I said, well, considering that I'm not a professional photographer and I was able to figure it out in less than 5 minutes, I'd love to know who the professional photographers are. Can you give me their name and their contact information so I can find out what about this photo it is that they exactly can't explain? And I reminded this guy that just claimed himself as a professional photographer. I said, remember we were on an investigation 2 weeks ago at the Shamrock Hospital in Shamrock, Texas, when you couldn't even get the camera to take a photo. So, I mean, you know, professional photographer.
Yeah, nothing chaps my ass more than you know, people presenting
like,
something.
I'm pushing the button, and the red-eye light's coming on, but it won't actually snap. Oh, well, you know what? If you come set your shutter speed down and change your ISO, it'll flash right off the bat. But, you know, most professional photographers would know that, wouldn't you? Wouldn't they? Yeah,
I know that.
I'm not a professional photographer. I can't get my camera to work quite a lot.
Hey, these people think that if you go buy a $1,000 camera, that because you own a nice camera, you're a professional photographer.
Well you can take really nice pictures as just a layperson now with the quality of cameras out there. I mean, I can use my iPhone and Instagram and take super cool pictures.
Absolutely.
That doesn't make me a professional. That just makes me somebody who can point and shoot my iPhone sometimes.
Absolutely.
And nine out of 10 times, I don't accidentally snap a picture of my finger or my foot or, you know, my ear.
Camera strap that gets claimed to be a worth it.
Well, see, and the other thing with photography and especially orbs, this is one of the things that gets me is people say, well, this has to be an orb because it's colored. And how on earth can that happen? Well, if you tilt your camera into the light and you look across your lens, you see a film of color. All lenses have a color to them.
Yeah.
Ta-da!
Well, actually, there's actually an even simpler explanation for it than that, whether it's the lens or not. Your CCD chip inside of your camera is composed up of three colors.
Yeah.
And depending on which direction you're pointing, one of those colors, especially if your CCD is dirty or starting to go out, will cause these flashes to pick up whatever color it tried to process on the CCD. It's like, you know, you got your red, green, and blue. And that's why every time when you see these photos, gee, it's kind of coincidental that all these orbs are always red, green, or blue, right?
I know. Yeah. I know. And, you know, I do, for a content website, they have an advice section, and one of their channels is paranormal, and I'm their paranormal advice person. I cannot tell you how many colored orbs I get. What does it mean? Don't colored orbs? Doesn't a yellow orb mean something? What's that?
I used to give during my presentation, you know, you, when you get into the orb debate with people, you could tell, because as soon as you start bringing it up and you start trying to explain it, you see people in the audience shaking their head in disagreement before you've even finished your sentence. And look, here's what I'll tell you. Do I believe that there is a such thing as an orb? Yes. What do I believe it to be? I believe it to be the next closest relative to what we commonly know as ball lightning. Okay, so
yeah. I'll agree with it, that.
Now this will be my argument for anybody who wants to, you know, argue about why orbs are present during paranormal activity and whatnot. And you know, we'll leave it at this. But let's just say that that a true natural electric property orb is existing and is present. The reason why you're going to find it around paranormal activity, the orb itself is nothing but electricity. People need to get away from it being a ghost, a spirit, or anything like that. If you see an orb and it's in conjunction with paranormal activity, the chances are, based on the theories of paranormal that everybody are familiar with, if an entity or something is trying to manifest itself, what is the first thing people say it does to their cameras and their batteries and their flashlights and everything else, right? It drains the energy, correct?
Yep.
So, now wouldn't it make sense naturally that if something was going to manifest itself before it would have to pull from your camera batteries and everything, that it would pull from natural electric properties in the actual atmosphere, which is where orbs or electronic ball lightning would exist, which if it was trying to manifest, it would be pulling it towards it like a vacuum to absorb it. So I'll give you that. If you have something that looks legitimate, and it may be a legitimate orb, but listen, just because it's bright white, just because it's blue, just because it's red, doesn't mean that it's an actual orb. Your chances of catching an actual orb is about the same chance or less of actually capturing ball lightning. And ball lightning only appears in areas that are high in silicone, which means lightning striking sand, for instance. Beaches. Beaches are a good place to see ball lightning. Places that are high in silicone, like Beverly Hills. we'll produce ball lightning, but I believe orbs, if they do in fact exist, are not paranormal in nature at all. They are a natural phenomena. They are not spirits. And I know there are people listening to this or that will be listening to this podcast, and I can tell you what they're doing right now. They're shaking their head and they're making that little frowny face, and they're telling me that they know for a fact that that orb had a face in it, and it appeared above right where their grandma was. So, you know, nobody's ever going to come to an agreement until some lab recreated results that produce consistent results happen. But, you know, instead of me telling you that there's no such thing as orbs or they don't exist, I'll say if they do, you're looking at it from the wrong way, and I believe that it would be, if orbs exist, that's natural energy cells being pulled in by the entity trying to manifest itself, if that's the case.
Fair enough.
That makes a whole lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I think that's just like, that's like common sense right there. Yeah.
But, you know, I'm sure you'll learn that on any, you know, Wednesday night go something show, so.
Oh, no, thanks. I'm going to watch them.
No, you know what? I actually haven't watched a paranormal show in quite some time. And I know I should stay up on it, but I just don't watch TV particularly. I did learn when I used to watch them, you know, back when they were sort of a novelty and it was like, hey, I'm not crazy. There are people out there that think like me.
Right.
What I learned is that an EVP stands for electronic voice phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's sometimes the voices of the dead can be captured on electronic phenomena. That's what I learned from ghost hunting shows.
Okay, well how much time do we have here?
We have about 5 minutes, and then we're going to need you to give us websites and stuff where people can find out about you.
Let me tell you about EVPs. Since reel-to-reel recorders, we have been capturing what has been referred to as electronic voice phenomena for years. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that everybody seems to be satisfied with catching them. In fact, they not only catch them, but that's one of the first things that they try to throw up as evidence of a place being haunted. Here's my problem with EVPs. Until we can prove the source of the EVP, how can you possibly, as a serious researcher, claim that it is being made by a ghost? Because at this point, we have not attached the fact that an electronic voice phenomena is being made by a ghost. Yet, we've thrown out other stuff. Okay, yeah, you might have, back in the day, you might have accidentally dubbed over a tape that had already been used. That used to be the biggest excuse. Now we're doing digital. Now we're doing this. But the problem is I know people who do ufology research that'll go to UFO hotspots and catch EVPs, and they're catching EVPs, but their explanation is it's communication coming from the actual UFO that's in the area. Mm-hmm. They can't prove that the same way that we can't prove that it's a ghost. It is strange. It's not supposed to be there, obviously, but you know what? Nobody's isolated it. Nobody's isolated it to find out, is it being done electromagnetically? Is it being done because the microphone source of whatever you're recording with is susceptible to radio frequency? Okay, yes, granted. Sometimes you can ask things and get a direct question, and you'll say, now how can you argue that? But people in the paranormal forget one thing. Right. Well, people in the paranormal forget one thing. They only count the times that something goes right, and they don't count the amount of times that something goes wrong. They'll ask 20 questions.
Yeah.
Right. They'll ask 20 questions, and they'll get a response to one that might be relevant, and they'll say, oh, my God, I got an EVP. That's phenomena. That's this. But what about the other 19 times? Because I can tell you right now, you know, if I go to a quarter machine to get a gumball, and I put in 20 quarters and I get one gumball, that's not a success.
Are you saying a stopped clock is right twice a day?
I'm just saying, you know, you have to calculate your hits versus your misses, and those hits need to be above chance. If you can get the same result flipping a coin, heads or tails, 50-50, you haven't proven anything. That has to be above chance. That's what makes it a phenomena. Not that you caught something, but that you caught something that was above the chance of you actually catching it. 66%? Now we're talking. You want to convince me about this ghost box stuff? Have it answer 8 out of 10 questions properly, not 1 out of 50, and that one be questionable because you asked a question you already knew the answer to, and you primed your audio to hear whatever little bit of noise matches what you think the answer is.
I agree with that 110%.
Yes.
You know, I've had some interesting ghost box sessions, but I'll tell you, you know, if I say, hey, can you say my name? Well, I know what my name is, so now I'm listening very intently for anything that sounds like my name. And so one little garble that comes across there that might not have even been my name sounds enough like it that I say, oh, did you hear that? That was my name. It said Mike. And, you know,
especially if you have a one-syllable name.
Right. But there have been times that there have been some really strange things on ghost boxes that I have not been able to explain. Some of it happened recently. And some of it happened at a location we were at recently that I turn around and am now sending Lloyd Auer back out there to experience that stuff for himself. So, you know, it's a very, very unique thing.
Yeah, extremely.
So we are nearing the end of the show, and I would like to give people the opportunity to visit your website, read your book, find you on Facebook, whatever it is, however it is you would like people to find you and get a hold of you.
All right. Well, there's several things. Number one, for the book itself, you can find it just about anywhere. It's, you know, it's Amazon, it's Half Price Books, it's Books A Million, it's, you know, pretty much every bookstore. It's at Book Depository. But you can Google it. You'll find it. It's just I Am a Ghost Hunter by Mike Roberts. It just 2 days ago. I wanted the paperback to come out first because I believe in people having hard copies of books, bringing things back old-fashioned. But 2 days ago, it just came out on Kindle, and, man, it's kicking some ass on Kindle because even though it's got that free lending thing for Prime members where they can borrow the book for free, it's, mm-hmm. every person that's borrowed the book has also bought the book, and then, like, 30 other people have bought the book in 2 days on Kindle. So
yeah, I'm buying it on Kindle right now, just so you know.
Awesome. I mean, it's moving. It's doing way better than I could have ever imagined. And I'm grateful for every person that purchases it and reads it because it's not a technical book. It's not a, you know, do it this way. It's all about me and my own personal experiences and what happened at these particular locations. But I leave it open. I don't try to draw any conclusions because I want to encourage people to go to these type of places and experience stuff themselves. And not just be content with what I experienced there. So you can Google I Am a Ghost Hunter by Mike Roberts. You'll find it. If you need to book anybody for some events, you can go to Demented Entertainment. It's spelled funny. It's DMENTBEntertainment.com. So DMENTBEntertainment.com. You can take a look at our client list. You can actually buy tickets through the website. But if you want to buy tickets, the easiest way to see all of our upcoming events and buy the tickets right there all in one spot is go to my new website called ParanormalTickets.com. And all of our events are right there, and all the tickets can be purchased right there. You can just scroll down to whichever event you want and buy your ticket.
Very good.
Outstanding.
All right. So, and also I noticed they can like you on Facebook, Demented
Entertainment,
LLC.
Yeah, they can like me on Facebook at Demented Entertainment. They can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/DementedEntertain. They can, anything that they want to do. I'm everywhere. I'm like that credit card. I'm everywhere you want to be.
That's right. Okay. Well, this has been really fascinating, and you have a really interesting and entertaining history, I've got to tell you. So it's been really fun. It's been really fun talking to you.
Yeah,
and
thanks,
I hope that, you know, when you got something to promote, you'll come back.
Yeah, absolutely. We always have something to promote. So I mean, we have events every month, and sometimes we have two or more events every month. So we've always got something to promote.
Okay, very good.
Very good.
Thank you so much. Okay,
thanks,
so Cheryl.
Mike.
Cheryl, yeah,
thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks. That's Mike Roberts, everybody. Cheryl.
Hi, Karen.
Next week.
Next week on June 21st, 6 to 8 Pacific, we'll have Donna and Peter Stagman, co-founders of Parahunter. You can find them at parahunter.com. And the week after, we'll be talking with Ramiro Ramirez of From Beyond and owner of Haunted Orange County.
Very good. Okay.
Very cool.
And there's a relatively new issue of Paranormal Underground magazine. It's out right now. And that's at paranormalunderground.net. And you can read
all I'm sorry. Oh, no. I was just going to say people can read it for free online, or they can order a paper copy on madcloud.com.
There you go. Hey, Rick.
Cool. Yes, ma'am.
Enjoy Father's Day on Sunday.
Oh, thank you. It's the second one.
Yeah, I know.
Nice.
Father's Day number two. And
yep.
For all the other dads listening, happy Father. And I got to say all the dads and stepdads, because my son's stepdad has been his dad, really. So for all the dads and stepdads, or anybody who even acts as in the capacity of father to a kid, happy Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day.
All right. So next week, 6 p.m. Wait, 6 p.m. Pacific.
What?
Sorry, I just totally blanked out. 9
what are you talking
Eastern.
About?
Now, next week, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, other times in the flyover states. Come on back to Paranormal Underground Radio on Z Talk Radio. Thanks, everybody. Good night.
Have a good night.
Night.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network.